This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness.
That was Joe Biden last night, now the Democratic nominee for president. When it comes to speeches, he's no Barack Obama. But he was still surprising to some. We're wrapping up our coverage of the Democratic National Convention, and we'll also take a look at what's ahead for the Republicans. That's coming up, of course, next week. My guests are political analyst Dr. Janae Nelson and activist Reverend Mark Thompson. Lines are open. I want to hear from you. DNC is over. What do you think? Lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Nelson, Reverend Thompson, how are you guys?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Hello. Glad to be here.
I am so glad that you are. Let's jump right in. Of course, it ended with a bit of a flourish last night, a bit of a surprise considering the way that things have been for the past 3 days before the end of the convention. The Democratic nominee, Joe Biden, and the vice presidential nominee, Kamala Harris, went outside after Joe Biden wrapped up the convention. Fireworks, socially distant cheers, people in masks. I'll start with you, Dr. Nelson. Your thoughts about that speech and how things wrapped up.
I think it's the speech he's been waiting 30 years to give. And I say that I believe that it's the speech he's been waiting 30 years to give because for the first time in his political career, saying exactly how he feels is being rewarded. And one of Joe's biggest problems over his political career is saying exactly what he feels. And I felt last night he was just so natural because he wasn't being hamstrung and trying to remember all the things he shouldn't say, all the things he should say. He was honest. He was raw. I mean, I saw that he even stuttered, right, or struggled with stuttering at a piece of the speech. And so I just felt like this is the speech he's waited 30 years to give because now he's facing an opponent that's going to say anything and do anything. And so now he doesn't have to be as politically guarded as he's been throughout his career.
Reverend Thompson, with that being the case, do you believe that he was presidential? Do you believe that this was not just the speech that he's been waiting to give for 30 years or so, but is this the speech that America, specifically the Democrats, were expecting from him?
No, I think you alluded to it. I think he surprised everyone. He was very strong, very tough last night. And I think that's what we need to hear. I still think that the Democrats want to be too nice when it comes to elections like this. Trump plays the dozens, and he plays hard. Joe Biden's best friend, who was in the video montage last night, Mouse from Delaware, who I know he grew up with, he grew up around black guys. He was a lifeguard at a swimming pool where, you know, the black kids swam. And Joe Biden learned how to play the dozens. That's where that famous story that the white media couldn't understand, the story about Corn Pop came from. And he got in a fight with a brother there in the pool named Corn Pop, or almost got in a fight. So Joe Biden knows how to play the dozens. His best friend Mouse said that Joe had the dirtiest mouth of all of them.
Yes, we saw that after during the Obama administration,
right.
Where we're talking about health care. Yes.
Big Evan deal. But I'm telling you, see, that's what we got to do. We Democrats want to play nice and not go on offense. Trump is always on offense. And that was one of the mistakes that was made in 2016. He would have lost too if Joe had been the nominee between Russian interference and being too nice. He and Kamala Harris need to lay into Trump like there's no tomorrow. Slater
well,
doesn't hit him right back and all that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, with that being said, my 7-year-old son said to my father this past summer, after the whole Charlamagne the God foolishness, or the whole thing where he got on the thing and said, you know, where he got on the show and said, if you're confused about who to vote for, if you're not voting for me, you're not black. And my 7-year-old son said, well, I don't see the problem with what he said. What he said was, and my son said, what he said was very clear. I have an ability to understand black folks. I may not be black, but I understand black folks. And as the Rev is saying, he has been around the culture enough to understand how to lay out an argument strongly enough that is going to allow him to adjudicate the case that he is going to represent light. And that is something that Joe, again, has been waiting to do. He has not been able to do that in his political career because it hasn't been seen to be presidential. It hasn't been, you know, there's plenty of times where Barack used to tap him like, Joe, no. So I agree with the Reverend. The DNC, the people inside the Democratic Party, want to always win the moral argument while the other side is playing dirty. And I'm not saying that the Democrats need to play dirty, but they have to become far more forceful than what we've seen them in the past.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're wrapping up our coverage of the Democratic National Convention, and we are also going to take a look at what the Republicans are going to be doing next week. Some of them are going to be right here in D.C. If you have a comment or a question about the DNC last night, Joe Biden's speech, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to play a little something from Joe Biden's speech last night, which really kind of goes to the heart of what both of you are saying.
One in it for workers who keep this country going, not just the privileged few at the top. One in it for those communities who have known the injustice of a knee on the neck.
Reverend, well, there it is, a not-so-veiled reference to George Floyd. That seems to have been a theme throughout this entire convention. And I think that Dr. Nelson made reference to this in 2008, as well as 2012, President Obama had to always be concerned about appearing to be too black to make sure that he was kind of spreading out, his leadership, his campaigns, his thought processes to all Americans. That doesn't seem to be the case, Reverend, during this convention.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
What I'm saying is here, you know, and I think one of the criticisms was, you know, early in 2008 when Barack Obama was campaigning, that, you know, a lot of the criticism was that he was just going to be dealing with black people and black issues and not be the president for all people. It seems that situation has been juxtaposed because there has been so much diversity during the course of this convention so is Joe Biden able to do something that, because he's a white guy, that Barack Obama could not do?
Are you sure we want to talk about this out loud?
Let's go ahead and talk about it out loud.
Well, you know, when you're the first African-American whatever, there's always a pressure not to appear that you're only there for African-Americans or to show favoritism.
Mm-hmm.
So often you go to the other extreme to show that you're more objective and not necessarily showing favoritism. But if you're a white guy and a liberal white guy, or you think you're a progressive white guy and feel as if you identify with the black community, I mean, I think some days Joe Biden wakes up and believes he's black. and let me be clear. I mean, black folk helped him get there. The people that he's been around his whole life. You know, sometimes we give you know, white friends honorary black status. Some of us do that. I think that, I mean, look at what he did. He picked a black woman as his running mate against the advice of some people, including, I know for a fact, some black folk in the campaign. You know, so that says a lot right there. And, I mean, I think there's some things that will be done by virtue of her presence. And then the other black women who are around him and who ended up pretty much forcing him to pick a black woman, I think you can expect to see some of them in government and in the cabinet. So I'm not really worried about the presence of African-Americans and other people of color in a Joe Biden administration. And I'm not saying that to say that that's just an alternative to Trump. I mean, if there were no Trump, I think a Biden administration would represent a great deal of diversity over any other average administration.
And I can honestly say I'm not really worried about it either. You know, I personally do like black people.
Well, Carol, to answer your question simply, yes. Yes, Joe Biden as a white man can do things that Barack Obama couldn't. Yes, as a 77-year-old white male who has taken his share of blows, who has been in the electorate for over 30 years, who has spent most of his time as a senator in what we consider to be the upper house, right? He hasn't been in the house. He's been in the Senate. He's spent most of his time in the Senate. And what they adjudicated, I think, very well, or displayed, I would say, because I thought they were making a case, and so that's why I used the word adjudication. Mm-hmm. They made the case that he understands how to govern. And so, yes, I think that he gets to say things that Barack couldn't say. Yes, I think he gets to do things that Barack gets to do, but not just because he's a 77-year-old white guy, but because he's been in the electorate so long that he knows most of the people inside the Senate. And if they dare say anything, then he gonna pull out everything that they got in their closet. So, yes, I believe he can, and I believe that is one of the biggest reasons that Barack Obama chose him as a running mate to begin with. Right. And so I think the reverse is happening here. Right. Joe's the one with the bona fides. Joe is the one with the respect amongst the electorate as far as amongst his peers and colleagues. And Kamala is the new kid on the block with the pizzazz, with the jazz, with the excitement. Right. And in the same way that they've just flip flop positions. I've given this example in California because I'm originally from there. When the state of California was ruined because Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't know what he was doing, we had to then go get Jerry Brown to right the ship. Who was standing next to Jerry Brown? Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom, who's the current governor of the state of California today. And so, yes, I do believe that there's things that he can do, and I think that we can see in a government format how beneficial it can be if it means ushering in now VP candidate Harris.
I appreciate that California context. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are wrapping up our coverage of the Democratic National Convention, and we're also going to preview later the Republican National Convention coming up on Monday. Nanette, thanks for holding on. Nanette, calling from Maryland, what's on your mind?
I just want to applaud the Democratic Convention. I think that it was very well planned, and I don't see where there should be any negative blows, but sure there are because of his opponent. However, I'm waiting for us to just hit the street. We need to make sure that we're at the voting polls, vote early, make sure that you have enough supplies that you might have to have in your car, an umbrella, a chair, some water, a bottle with bleach put in, a container, because they may not allow you to go in the facility unless it's your turn to vote, so that you might have to urinate in that container. However, we got to hit the street.
Okay.
The convention was very well planned. I have nothing negative to say about it, because if they had put Mickey Mouse up to run, I would vote for him.
Okay. Nanette, thank you so much. She brings us to another rather interesting point from last night. And, of course, this is part of what we've seen in the headlines as well. This is Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms from last night.
There are those who are disgracefully using this pandemic to spread misinformation and interfere with voting.
Well, there it is, Dr. Nelson. There's been so much talk about voter suppression, voter interference. The questions remain about what the Postmaster General is doing. All of those obviously a concern for Democrats. And I suspect that we're going to continue to hear that not only tomorrow, because there is supposed to be a vote on the Hill about funding for the post office, but also Louis DeJoy, the Postmaster General, going to speak before the Democratic-controlled House Oversight Committee. And I think all of this kind of hovered over this convention this week.
No, absolutely. I think what we have to remember is that when folks know they're going to lose, they try to cheat. And so we see the cheating in play. But we have to remember that this takes us back to the fact that the Civil Rights Act of 1965 was gutted. Section 4 and Section 5 are gone. And at that point, that is when we start to see this ramp up of folks not being able, votes being suppressed, especially amongst black folks. So this is not new. This is a trail of tears, like to call it, of trying to get black folks disengaged from voting. What I think we have to really consider and what we have to think about is how racist it is to dismantle the post office. Because not only are we talking about the suppression of votes, we have to remember at one point in time, the post office was the agency that employed the most amount of African Americans federal system. So what we have to understand is that this is a 2- and 3-prong attack, and if we do not understand it for what it is, we will fixate on one piece of this and forget that it's a multi-prong attack. As my brother Rev said on the other end, the Republicans have no problem playing dirty, and we have to understand what they are doing and come with a strategy. And I know that I have a call right after I get off the radio about what we are going to do as far as mobilizing at churches to become drop-off centers so that we can make sure folks can vote via mail-in ballots.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Walter, calling from Northeast, quickly, what's on your mind? You got 20 seconds.
Well, Joe's going to have to be as dirty as Trump, because we know that Trump likes to counterattack. But if Joe can attack Trump directly and saying, you can't be nice with Trump. It's time to be as nasty as Trump, but still have your dignity.
Interesting. Walter, stay with us, because I want Reverend Thompson to react to that. But lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to hear what you think about the DNC this week. We're also going to talk about the RNC coming up on Monday. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. But we're going to continue talking about this on SiriusXM Channel 141. And we're going to continue to take your phone calls. Keep trying. I'll take as many as possible. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are wrapping up our coverage of the Democratic National Convention. Joe Biden now the Democratic nominee for president. All things set. And, of course, we're going to also talk about the Republicans. They're coming up next week. My guests are political analyst Dr. Janae Nelson and activist Reverend Mark Thompson. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If the line is busy, please keep trying. I promise I will talk to you. Before the break, Walter said Joe's got to be nasty. Reverend Thompson, I think you and Walter may be cut from the same cloth.
I mean, this guy plays the dozens. He's like a kid. And we need to, you know, hit him back hard. And you can't be polite with something like that. That's his stock and trade. He's like a virgin. Some people may not be old enough to remember. But he's like a cross between Don Rickles, Foster Brooks, and Rodney Dangerfield. And it's just comedic insult machine. You know, is Joe Biden alive? Joe Biden doesn't know he's alive. I mean, that's a game he plays. We need to hit him back. He works for Putin. I told Joe Biden you need to start calling him Putin Tang. That's a punch that lands. You need to play the dozens back with him. Call him Putin Tang. He says Pocahontas. Call him Honky POTUS. I mean, you've got to – when we were growing up on the playground, if someone played the dozens and you didn't respond, nobody had any respect for you. So Walter's absolutely right. We need to call Trump everything that he is. And the fact of the matter is, whatever we call him is going to stick and it's going to be true. And he's so insecure. Remember when the Republicans talked about those tiny hands?
Mm.
He obsessed. That was the only thing that got to him. He obsessed over those tiny hands, the tiny hand comment, for the rest of the whole campaign in 2016. You know, so, you know, there's another couple of names we can call him that I know he would obsess over. I won't say it on WHUR radio.
I appreciate it. We all need to keep our jobs. Walter, there you go. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I do remember Julia Louis-Dreyfus made a comment last night. I can't repeat it only because I don't remember the order. I didn't take that test that the president took where he had to recite the, you know, the animals or the shapes or things. But, you know, I think that's kind of what Mark is talking about. But, you know, Dr. Nelson, here's the thing. If Joe Biden has to fight fire with fire, what is the risk of the policy message being lost in the firefight?
I mean, to be honest with you, at this point, Harold, who cares about the policy? I mean, and I don't mean who cares about it. I mean, because I care about it, right? I have a PhD in political science. I teach my students to pay attention to it. But in 78 days, no one's going to remember the policy, right? We dealt with policy and fighting each other about policy in the convention. I mean, before the convention happened in the primary, and that's when there were 16 folks up there, and everybody had a different policy position. I think last night they made clear that, right? They made clear what their policy platform was going to be. It was very clear. I think they started with these attacks, as Rev has said. You know, there were some corny jokes I think that were in there, like one that said, you know, how to remember vote 33033. That'll be the year that Trump, you know, releases his tax returns. So I do think the machine is starting to do it. I don't know if it's going to get as dirty as Rev wants it to get. And I think we have to be careful about how dirty it gets, because you have to remember, we have a woman now on the ticket. And if we start playing the dozens, I'll say it like this, like my dad used to say, don't play the dozens and then get mad when I talk about your mama. So I guess my thing is that if we get too deep into that game, we have a woman on the ticket that we already know they're going to attack, and so we don't want to make it open season for this black woman that's also South Asian, right? We don't want to open up and make it open season for her and allow them to just pummel her, because we already know they're coming after her.
But to
they already are. They already open season on her. They're calling her a bed wench. They call her a heels up Harris. They put selling T-shirts, Joe and the hoe.
Mm.
They already open season. They can't get any more open season than that. And that's why I'm saying, you know, we need to deal with, how can he call somebody a hoe? How can Trump?
I mean, yeah, it's
But let me just say this. Right. I mean, he has been accused by multiple women of sexual harassment and sexual assault. How can he hold a glass up to anyone? You know, I don't think that because we always lose when we do that, when we're polite and we don't respond. You can go through a whole list of Democrats who lost races because they were attacked and they did nothing about it. Michael Dukakis.
Yeah, I was about
John
to say.
John Kerry. You know, Switzerland. How does somebody who went and fought in Vietnam lose somebody who was AWOL in a drug treatment center during Vietnam? Honestly, Dr. Nelson, it's already open season on the system, which really ticks me off. And I'm going to say this on WHUR because this is kind of home for me. It feels like I'm home, WHUR. Some of my brethren, some of you black men need to get in formation. Black men are being targeted, and black millennials more than anyone else, on social media for disinformation and propaganda against Kamala Harris. Thousands have already been disinformed and propagandized just since we've been on the air. So black men are being led to believe all she did was lock up millions of black men, which she didn't in California. Black men are being led, turned away from her because she's married to a white man. So it's not just what we need to do with Trump, but some of our brothers. This is the 25th anniversary of the Million Man March. We need to get in formation and for a change support this black woman. Black women have supported us. We need to support her.
Now, Harold, before he goes on, before you go on with your next question, I want to salute you, my dear brother, for that, and I want to salute you wholeheartedly for that, because I am very tired. I'm very tired as a black woman having to come to her defense all the time with black men. I was just on a podcast last week, and it was a podcast of love. It didn't get cantankerous, but it's exhausting on having to deal with black men around this issue. So much so that I have a piece that came out in an international newspaper called "Racism is the Third Person in My Romantic Relationships" to talk about the double bind brothers put us in. And so I salute you and I appreciate you for calling the brothers out.
Well, to your point, Dr. Nelson, that came up yesterday, and it came up the day before yesterday on this program, where we had a woman who, while she said it wasn't necessarily her, but in her circle, she said that there were, you know, black people who really had a problem with Kamala Harris because of her work as a prosecutor in California. There were men that she spoke about who were not going to support, you know, Kamala Harris, the caller, that is. And, you know, and there was also the question, and I mentioned this on yesterday as well, where, you know, there still is this feeling among some black people that, the white man's ice is colder.
Well, let me say this really quickly, and I made a longer rant on this on Facebook, so if anybody wants to hear my extended viewpoint on this, you can go there. And on there, I'm Sherice Nelson on Facebook, spelled Sherice, and I'm doing this purposely and inviting people to go watch the whole rant, but I'll give the short piece here. The biggest problem that I have with the prosecutorial piece is that 90% of prosecutors in the United States are white. So for all of the things that we want her to defend herself for, if she was to go back and give us these receipts about what she did inside the system, it would then call into question every single case that she gave as an example of what she did. And now she is far removed from that position. If those cases were to be opened up today, the likelihood of a white person re-adjudicating the case or deciding what happened in that case is 9-1. So when we want to talk about, you know, she was a prosecutor, she locked this person up, she locked that person up, all these kind of things, if we get to going case by case by case, what we're going to find is, and I can almost guarantee you money, because my cousin worked inside the assistant district attorney's office down there in Houston, Texas, what I know we'll find is that they want to provide this level of charge, and she almost at all times provided a reduced charge. And if she goes back and explains that to all of our ignorant behinds that want to keep having this conversation, then it puts all of anybody that was locked up in jeopardy.
So now here's another question to that point, Reverend Thompson. When Biden debates Trump, because Trump has been talking about being the law and order president since the beginning of his campaign, is it and Joe Biden supporting the 1994 Criminal Justice Act, and
which critics of Kamala Harris,
yeah, but
never bring up. I just want to point that out.
That's kind of my point. Is that a wash between Biden and Trump in a debate? Because, and people have short memories; they don't remember, you know, how much blood was running in the streets, you know, across this nation when it, you know, back in 1994. And now Trump is doing the same kind of shouting the same kind of rhetoric. And so is that a wash between the two of them?
I mean, I don't know if it's a wash. Again, it just intrigues me that a woman is being held accountable for criminal justice and these white men are not. And that's problematic. Bernie Sanders also voted for 94 crime bill. We want to be real about it. I mean, it's hard to hold someone accountable for what happened in a different era. Because in 1994, black people supported the crime bill.
Come on,
the majority, the majority of black voting population were for it. There were only four of us, five of us, me, Dick Gregory, Maxine Waters, Gary Webb, and Joe Madison, and Reverend Joseph Lowry, who were chaining ourselves to the CIA headquarters because Ronald Reagan was bringing the crack into the neighborhoods. Nobody wanted to talk about that, though. They just wanted to pass a crime bill. That's what everybody was on. The Black Caucus was for it. Black preachers were for it. Black senior citizens were for it. Because, as you said, Brother Fisher, blood was flowing in the streets. Now, everybody realizes what a mistake that was now. But how is it that this one African-American woman is being held accountable for it? I want to give you one factoid, and there are plenty. I got a whole list of 50 criminal justice reforms she did in California, including addressing sex trafficking, including the mortgage settlement, including lowering the recidivism rate for black men. There were 1,900 marijuana arrests, and there might have been other arrests included. 1,900 people charged with marijuana possession or distribution or whatever when she was the San Francisco DA for 8 years, 1,900. Guess how many of them got prison time for marijuana?
Zero.
45. Only 45. And we don't even know for sure, because of the way records were kept, that they got prison for marijuana as opposed to other offenses that were on there with the marijuana. Now,
and that's what I argue. That's why I said zero.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And those 1,900, all right, all of their records have been expunged. All right, so the point is, now the advantage that gives us with Trump, he can't knock her as a prosecutor since he wants to be Richard Nixon's apostle and for law and order.
And that's what I was asking. Yeah.
Right. So that checkmates him. That's why all of us on this side just shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like we're doing that work. But I'm telling you, we are targeted by Russia, by bots, by trolls on social media. Right now, even as we're talking, I'm willing to bet you there are people saying things attacking the system. Folks, let me just tell you something right now. Anybody on social media telling you not to vote is not a real black person. They are participating in voter suppression. When you see people on Twitter and they have a whole string of numbers behind their Twitter handle, that is a bot or a troll. That's not real. Check the pictures out. If it's not a digital photograph, everybody, senior citizens know how to take a digital photograph now. If you've got some pasted on photograph, you know that's not a real person. Question all of this coming at you, trying to discourage you from voting, because that is a form of voter suppression.
Now, here's the other piece. I want to, you know, begin this kind of transition to the RNC, and not necessarily next week. I should say GOP. So Mike Pence said last week, I believe it was, that he can't wait to debate Kamala Harris in Utah. So what is the strategy for a Kamala Harris with Mike Pence? Does she attack his Christian values, considering who he agreed to be vice president for?
Harold, we don't got to parse out. I mean, is this going to be an automatic beatdown? I mean, what do you mean? What does she need to attack? Everything. I mean, when we try to I think the question is not what, it's how, or not even how, it is what first, right? Is it Christian values? Is it the fact that you have no problem not holding upholding the Constitution? Is it the fact that that you have been complicit with the level that participated in collusion and allowed for, like the brother said, the interference of Russia? I mean, it's not what is she going to attack, it's what's first, right? Because there is a lineup, and I loved the fact that he said, oh, I can't wait to debate her. And I was like, me too, because I can't wait till she smack you in the mouth. I cannot wait until we get on a national stage and we get to see her neck pop, her finger roll, right, so that you understand that when black women get you together, this is what it looks like. Because people are not watching CNN. People haven't seen her in the Senate. She's been in the Senate 3 years. They haven't seen how she's dealt with AG Barr. They haven't seen how keen she is as a prosecutor and using her prosecutorial skills inside of the Senate. So now it's going to be on full display. And I can guarantee you this is the type of primetime TV that Trump has wanted. He wants numbers. He's going to get numbers now. He's not going to get numbers from necessarily for him and Joe, but he's damn sure going to get numbers looking at Mike Pence get his hat handed to him by Kamala Harris.
I think that is going to be, if nothing else, extremely entertaining. I mean, you talk about, you know, opposites and seeing the yin and yang clash instead of bond. I think it's going to be really fascinating. Next week, Monday, the RNC, the nomination process, of course, will still begin in North Carolina as it was originally planned. But even as we talk right now, there is construction going on the lawn of the White House because the president is expected to accept the nomination of his party at the White House. All of this because of the coronavirus. What do you expect, Reverend Thompson, from the Republicans next week? Is it going to look completely different from what we saw in the DNC? You know, it was mega minority this week. You know, all colors of the racial rainbow this week. Are we going to see whitewash next week with the RNC?
Oh, you know we are. I mean, there's no question about it. And first of all, just to go back on Pence, it's not going to be a debate. Because remember, his wife said he can't be alone in a room.
Now, I knew
he was going to bring that up. That's not going to happen.
But they're going to be so far apart. So they, you know.
No, he said he can't be with another woman. He can't even, you know, be in a room. But as far as Trump, we have the March on Washington. I'll be back in Washington this Friday for the March on Washington. Folks, we invite all of you to come. Socially distant. You get your temperature checked. Mask gloves at the Lincoln Memorial. The night before, and I know this for a fact, he's not only going to be in the White House, he's going to have, the whole convention is going to be a comedy. I mean, we're going to get a lot of laughs from it because they're clowns, they mess up everything. There are no real celebrities that are going to be there. I guess Diamond and Silk will be there. That'll be the biggest celebrity there. The biggest celebrity. But he plans to have fireworks shot in the air in Washington on Thursday night, y'all, to spell out his name. I mean, that's the kind of silliness that we're dealing with here. No, it's not going to be diverse. It's not going to be anything. It's going to be it's really going to be a laughing stock. Scott Baio, Diamond and Silk, those are the biggest celebrities. I don't even think, I mean, Clint Eastwood can't come back. He made a fool out of himself the last time he was there. I mean, it's going to be an absolute mess. He's going to be ranting and raving. And that's why I think you send him in to the convention with an insult so he can obsess over that. Hit him at a place where he obsesses much. He can't talk about anybody else. And he's got anything else because he's got some weak spots. I'd say hit those weak spots if I was running the Democratic campaign.
So what do you think are those weak spots, Dr. Nelson? And moreover, what do you think will be the message for the RNC, you know, next week? If they could talk about, I don't even know how I'm going to say this, if they could cut through, you know, the propaganda and all of this other stuff, and really talk about what their platform is and what their vision is for America and for another 4 years, what do you think their strategy would be?
Well, I think they're going to continue to fearmonger. Let's just be very clear about it. I think they're going to, I think the slogan is still making America great. I think that's what the slogan is. I don't know. I think that's what the slogan is. And so I think they're going to fearmonger. I think they're going to be proud of the fact that they are, you know, DNC so white. Remember we had Oscars so white. It's going to be RNC so white. And I think that they are going to be proud of that fact. They're going to pump up their heritage, that they're going to say that you know, that multicultural BS that the DNC did, but this is the real America. And I think that's going to be their positioning. Is it going to be comical? Yes, it's absolutely going to be comical. I think it's going to, you know, reek of fascism. And I also just think that at this point, what he is hoping for, let me put it this way. I think people need to understand that Trump never got a majority. He only ever had a plurality. So all he is doing is speaking to really the same people. And he hasn't won anybody over. He's losing people. So what this really is a show of it's a self-centered time where he's going to pump himself on the chest about how well he's done, while the rest of us who don't, or the rest of even the people that call themselves Republicans, look on and say, "Oh yeah, right," and we're not going your way.
Who does Trump need to convince next week? And moving into the election in November?
I don't think he cares about who he needs to convince. I think that's the problem, right? I think that's the problem, is that he does not care about who he needs to convince. As Obama said during the DNC, I hoped he would have grown into the job. I hoped he would have become the president for all Americans. It is clear that he can, that he has not, because he can't. So this whole thing about who does he need to, who he needs to sway, there is nobody to sway, because he has no interest in swaying anybody. He only has an interest in beating his chest and feeding this red meat to his base.
Then who does Joe Biden need to convince? Because Hillary Clinton said she said earlier this week, I won, you know, popular vote by 3 million and I still lost. And she said it could happen again. And so if you are of the mind that that is true, who does Joe Biden and Kamala Harris need to convince?
Rev, I'll let you go.
All right, so to the original point, Donald Trump, both of them, both Donald Trump and Joe Biden, are trying to convince the same group of people. Donald Trump's trying to convince white women that all of us are Willie Horton, right? Willie Horton and MS3 are coming for you, all right? That's what he's doing. Joe Biden is also trying to convince white women that, you know, y'all need to let this go, because if it hadn't been for white women, Trump wouldn't be in office. See, you know, we do internalize oppression. White women didn't like Hillary Clinton. You know, now we've got some black men who don't like Kamala Harris. So we all do, historically, press groups sometimes do internalize oppression, racism, sexism. We're too hard on our own. That's why black people are mad at Kamala but not mad at Joe Biden. So what Joe Biden is in the lead in, quite frankly, is convincing white women. He's got to hold the same white women from 2018 in the midterms. White women change that. He's already got black women. I think he has most black men, he and Kamala do. I mean, there are a few. But see, that's the thing. What Hillary was talking about, it was less than 100,000 votes spread across three states that gave Trump the Electoral College. So if you get Kanye on the ballot in Wisconsin, that's what they tried to do. And you can pick off some of these black men's votes. So Trump is targeting white women and confused black men. I'm going to let y'all out of jail. I'm going to let you out of jail, which really isn't true. You know, he's let a couple of celebrities out of jail, but he's not letting black men en masse out of jail. He's not doing anything for black men.
But Rev, can we address though the fact that many of these black men voted for Trump in 16 behind this positioning of power about in some ways maintaining the patriarchy and for the nitty gritty of it, for black men who had businesses so they could keep more money in their pockets. So I think that we have to really drill down to some of the issues as to why black men had an affinity towards Trump to begin with, and those same issues in 16 are some of the same issues that we're having right now, right? We have a woman there, right? So this is, Trump still represents a certain level of patriarchy, right? Joe has said that he's going to spend money here, spend money here, spend money here. Well, anybody with a brain knows that means that taxes are going to have to go up. That means less money comes out of, that means less money comes in your pocket, and black men that are running small businesses, especially black men that run barbershops, are going to have to start paying more taxes. So to me, some of those issues amongst black men are still there this go round.
Let me ask in a few minutes here. I need I need some help, maybe even some counseling. And I'm not going to pretend that either one of you are an expert on white women voters. But, you know, Dr. Nelson, tell me, why is it that white women would vote for someone who is accused of sexual harassment, sexual assault, grabbing women by the whatever?
It's easy, Harold.
Help me with that because in my book, if and I'm not a white woman, obviously, but I can't vote for that person.
You're bringing logic to an illogical situation.
I'm so sorry about
These are women who see these white men as their sons. Remember, one of the biggest issues when Brett Kavanaugh was coming on the Supreme Court was many white women felt that he got caught up, right, or this whole idea of this level of sympathy and guilt that they felt for Kavanaugh, not with what he did. And so that's why. It's because white women benefit inside of the structure of racism. And there's this misnomer that white women in the South were far more genteel when they had slaves and they were the nicer one of the two. And that's not necessarily the case. And the name of the book is escaping me, but there is a historical narrative that's come out that talks about how white women during slavery times actually only performed and did well or treated the slaves well when the white male master was there so that she wouldn't be seen as making then the product less valuable, right? And so this whole idea that white women have been more genteel over time is a falsehood to begin with, and that every time that they see these white men in power, many of them see their sons, and many of them do not want to lose their level of status that they get to have by their whiteness.
Real quick, 20 seconds, because I've got to close. Go ahead, Reverend.
But it's not just their sons. Many of them see their fathers. That's why a lot of them voted for Roy Moore, because their fathers and grandfathers married teenage mothers. That was the culture then. There's also, again, that internalized sexism, and there's a level of fear. I've talked to white women. You know, when you've been victimized, there's even a level of fear toward the person who's victimizing you. And Trump is the biggest victimizer of all. So you support him in the subconscious because you think supporting him is going to make him stop victimizing you.
I think we need to stop right there. Wish we could talk about this more, but we will next week. Don't forget, the Republican National Convention starts on Monday in North Carolina and actually here in the D.C. Metro, and we will be talking about it. I want to thank Dr. Janae Nelson and Reverend Mark Thompson for talking to us. You guys have a good weekend and be safe. I appreciate your time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Friday, August 21st. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us, or you can tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night, and have a wonderful and safe weekend.